hello, and welcome back to another episode of Podcast Assemble, the show where you come for your rambling, geeky download. My name's Tommy, and I am delighted, as always, to be joined by my friend and co-host from across the pond. It's our resident president serving a third term of the pod, DL. How are you, mate?
I am a dictator. The dictator of podcasting.
Just remove the tater, it's fine.
The dick. Got me.
Straight from Big Bang Theory. That's got to be terrible humor.
Oh, God, dude. That show went on for a while, though.
Far too fucking long.
Be terrible. I mean, it's profitable, obviously.
I mean, at one point, it clearly was. How are you, mate?
I'm good, man. I'm the dictator of podding.
You ready to fight in the Civil War? You amped?
I'm feeling more like the town that couldn't be bothered.
Just avoided it.
Just couldn't be bothered. I think that's actually we're not even talking about symbols and shit yet, but I think that's actually probably what that represented. Just the people that...
Yeah. I'd probably want to live in that town.
Do we care? Is it better for us not to care?
That's a great question.
Anyway.
Politics, man.
Yeah, politics. This movie delves into it.
Well,
not really.
Well, talked about the movie today. Anyway, yeah. It's going to be an absolute doozy. Because, I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves here. But Alex Garland, we've talked about a number of his films. He's one of our favorite directors. And we got to see it in one of my favorite cinemas.
Yeah, and it was like a pretty filled out theater. It wasn't full, right. But it was filled out. It was a big theater.
Yeah, it was big.
Yeah, the last time we were there, we weren't in the main event.
We went to the Ritz in Randwick, which is a cinema in Sydney. And it's so old school. The walls smell of popcorn. It's that kind of cinema.
It's also just like in a nice little community area. Yes. There's like bars, restaurants. There's a lot going on a Tuesday, dude.
Yeah.
A lot. Compared to like, when you go to Bondi events, it's just like open, dead. Somebody's waxing the floor.
People are picking up Desmond Gomez to take in. Yeah,
and they're like, it's just like a transitory. Yeah, it's not a big social scene.
Yeah, okay.
I guess I was trying to go.
But I have like a big affinity to that type of cinema as well. Like I remember growing up, and I mean probably you do as well. But like the first cinema I really remember going to had that vibe to it.
What, the Westfield one or the Ritz?
Like, I didn't grow up coming to Sydney.
Well, we had Westfield in America.
The Ritz. Yeah. So it was that kind of, walls and the floor smell of popcorn. And like my parents would lie to get me into films that I was too young to see and they didn't give a shit. It was like that vibe.
Yeah.
I love that about the Ritz. It's such a cool cinema. Support the arts, guys.
Well, we may lose our our loyalty points for event cinemas. But honestly,
that's how they get you.
Yeah, it is. It's like the age old debate, dude, corporate or the small guy. The reality is though, like you get a couple tickets for like $9 every now and again, which is not, the Ritz was only $12.
Yeah.
So I mean, overall, maybe we're saving money.
I wonder if that's every day.
Maybe.
That'd be, if it was.
Probably not Fridays.
If it was, I'm going there every time.
Probably
that's our new cinema.
Yeah.
Full stop.
I'm in. Maybe we should do dinner before next time, too. Oof, a couple little places. Was it the Blossom of Mumbai?
I mean, that sounds great.
There was a little Indian place.
They do cocktails?
I'm sure they do.
Oof.
I'm sure they do.
What's your favorite Indian cocktail? The Blossom of Mumbai kind of sounds like one.
It does, but I don't think I've had an Indian cocktail. For better or worse.
It just reminds me, the podcast I've been harping on about, the Film Addicts podcast with Addy and Riggs, dropped this week. The episode I featured on, so guys go check it out. It's a really fun episode.
And you were like the main feature.
I feel like I should have shut up at some times. There is a fantastic bit in it where I make a point about a spicy prophet affecting spice profits, and literally so many tangents went from there. So like that could be an Indian restaurant, it could be where you get your taxes done. It's like,
wait, why is he a spicy prophet? Because I do remember that. I didn't,
because he's a bit spicy,
because he's a spicy,
and also
dude.
The spice is in him.
I get that.
He's making all the spicy decisions.
Okay it's like hot takes guy.
Yeah, he's hot takes guy.
Hot wings, but the rest of that was very it devolved quickly,
so quickly, much like we do a lot of the time when we're not on that. We had to cut so much of it. It was a lot of fun. You guys should definitely check that out. But also, friend of the show Riggs and a number of the friends of the show, thank you all for reaching out, asked us our opinion on the Joker 2 trailer, Folie de Loup.
It was cool. It was kind of what I was expecting.
Okay.
Like the fact that they were like, that there was little musical elements.
Did you think they were trying to hide the musical part?
No, I think they were like teasing it.
Okay.
And I didn't think they were going to like have a trailer where it was just like, there's no business, like show business. Like no obviously business, there was going to be, yeah, like some like plot moments, and you got some of that too with them meeting in Rikers or whatever it is.
Rikers, Arkham.
Arkham Asylum. Isn't it based off of it?
I know. Well, I mean, Arkham. Well, the thing for me is like, and I was kind of like hedging this at you before without asking directly, is like, how excited are you for this? Because I remember watching the first one and feeling very overwhelmed by, it's a lot of movie. Like, it's heavy themes. Dude getting beaten down by Sai. I'm like, oh my God, I've got to do another one of these.
I definitely like enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I think it was like part of the allure of this was it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Okay.
Like it didn't come out with like a bunch of like, at least I don't remember like a massive marketing push and like a bunch of, you know, like a Marvel style. Oh, I've heard about this movie for a while. All these trailers. Like it just didn't feel that way. It kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. It was really good at people were like, word of mouth, grassroots were pretty excited about it.
Got a lot of negative press. It wasn't long after the dude went into the cinema in a Joker mask and killed a bunch of people.
It did.
So I remember a lot of people like, oh my God, it's R-rated. He's gonna, it's the time people can kill. It's the time. And I'm like, oh my God, all right, chill out, guys.
It's a movie.
It's a movie.
It's a movie.
Yeah. Look, I'm genuinely quite excited for this. My other question for you is though, like, how much of this is all in their heads?
I don't know.
All of it?
I am like, excited about it as well. I also saw a thumbnail for it on Instagram.
Yeah, right.
Where it was like, where Lady Gaga was like Harley Quinn, but like in a bikini and her tits were all out. Like it was like very provocative. Like she wasn't naked. My point is like, I'm pretty sure that was an AI generated image. Yeah, bro. And I'm just like,
no shit.
No, you dude, it looked like it actually wasn't. It looked like it could have been the Suicide Squad Harley Quinn, but Lady Gaga with, and Joaquin Phoenix was in it. My point was like, this goes very much against what I just saw. Like it didn't seem like it was being marketed
different values
the way the trailer was. Yeah, so okay. I was like, what's going on here? But no, I am excited for it. Not just because I think Lady Gaga might be in a bikini, just because it will be, I think, a good movie.
I think probably the movie thing first. Hopefully it's not just a direct rip of another Martin Scorsese film. I hope it has different elements to it. But the first one was what? Somewhere between Taxi Driver and not the comedian. What's King of Comedy?
I haven't seen King of Comedy, but I get the Taxi Driver reference. The Taxi Driver reference is fair.
It's a lot of those things.
Well, like, I just wonder how long you can have a Joker movie without a Batman.
Wow.
Isn't that a fair question?
Yeah. So I was listening to one of my other favorite podcasts from a little while ago, and they were actually, funnily enough, it was just about the time they were doing the first Joker movie. And they were talking about this, and they were like, the one co-host absolutely hated the Joker film. And his reasoning was that, like, you're trying to play this off as like a superhero comic book film and changing the dynamic and changing the genre when none of it's actually a comic book movie, like at all. Like none of it is. Like if you were just doing this as like a dude who's inspired by things and, you know, like he has this horrible journey in society and ends up in the position he's at, then that's fine. Just market me that movie. You don't have to tag Joker on and throw Bruce Wayne's dad in for no reason. Give me some of the comic book elements that are actually realistic.
I don't mind it for the first movie.
Sure.
Because it's like the origin story of the Joker and you don't really...
A version of the Joker.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Yes. God, I feel like I'm talking about fucking Palestine, Israel. I gotta qualify every single thing I say. Yeah,
you do.
The point I'm trying to make is that like if they don't start bringing... Like if it's its own weird little thing all on its own again and now it's just like the origin story of Harley Quinn and the Joker, I'm like, you need to give me a little bit more of the broader world eventually. It doesn't need to be, to your point or your podcast that you listen to's point, it doesn't need to be a comic book movie.
Sure.
But it does need to eventually kind of be in the world and try and explore some of that
stuff.
To keep
calling it Joker, feel like. Yeah,
explore
maybe
like some of the themes of the comic, not just the themes of like a mentally ill villain.
Yeah, okay. Give me anything. But how do you actually say the name of the film? Joker, Folie à Deux?
Folie à Deux.
Folie à Deux.
What is it? How is it spelled? I don't even actually remember.
F-O-L-I-E-A with a little Folie à Deux.
It's probably volume 2.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
I don't know.
Good. I'm glad you know
I'm
that.
The one taking French lessons, so I should know.
You should definitely know that.
Sounds like volume 2.
Guys, if you want us to listen to us bench about our weeks, feel free to stick around. There will be time codes in the description, as always, supplied by editing master Mr. Matthew Bliss of blissery.fm. If you could as well, give us a 5-star review while you're there. That would be absolutely wonderful. We really appreciate you for doing that. It helps with, you know, all the things you don't understand, algorithms, stuff you understand, we don't. And also, DL, I know you like to pass the pod. Do you think people should pass the pod?
I think they should pass the pod.
To whom? Whom should they be passing
the pod?
They should
be passing the pod to their grandparents, their friends, their family, their children, their future children.
All... all elements of their lives. Just play it to the unborn fetus in the belly.
Exactly.
Okay, all right, like, cool.
But in low volume.
Okay, yeah.
We don't want to hurt their ears.
Cut the swearing down for this episode too. But no, we appreciate it, guys. If you pass the pod, getting new listeners really, really helps. DL.
Yeah.
What have you been up to, buddy? What's been happening?
Oh, dude. Fallout.
Talk to me. So I haven't started this yet.
You haven't started it at all?
There's zero.
Have you ever played one of the games?
Zero.
Oh, man. So you're freshie.
I have.
Welcome to the Fallout, baby.
I have a lot of context on the games.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're in for a treat if you want to. Well, I mean, the show's a treat, and you're in for a treat if you want to play the games as well.
So this is on Amazon?
It is on Amazon. It's probably the best thing I've seen on Amazon.
Right. Wait, wasn't Yellow Jackets on Amazon?
No, it's Paramount.
Paramount.
Paramata. Paramount.
It came all the way from Paramount.
Paramount Plus.
Paramount. Okay, interesting. Talk to me about Fallout then.
Yeah, the Fallout's like, for the listeners who don't know, it's kind of set in an ulterior version of the United States that like was a bit more advanced technology wise in the 50s.
That seems like something we're going to be talking about today.
It is. It's different though. Because it's almost like a branch timeline. It's like the 50s, okay. They discovered a bunch of scientific stuff that basically brought society forward a bit farther than it should have been. But the culture is still the 50s. And it eventually, you know, the Second World War actually balloons into a conflict with China.
Ooh.
And
so many real life parallels.
And nuclear war. Right. And basically Fallout games are set in the apocalypse after nuclear war on this, like, you know, in the wasteland of America, which is really just and it's a great canvas for exploring all the different types of themes you want to explore about humanity and sci-fi elements, like mutated monsters are out there.
Yep.
You know, you've got different factions for what's like emerged out of the fall of the world in a post-apocalyptic world.
Interesting.
And it's got these cool, like this cool culture around like radiation and like you know you can't get too radiated or like affects your health, and it creates all these crazy monsters and things. There's ghouls.
And you come out of one of what are the?
Oh yeah, sorry. There's a whole bunch of different storylines because there's a bunch of different games, right? It's kind of like The Witcher, like that, except each game is a new rendition. But there's this company called Vault-Tec that is like one of the big drivers of all the plots, and they created these vaults in the lead up to the apocalypse for people to kind of, just in case, you can go live in this vault if it happens. And so most of the game, it is. Most of the games start out with you as a vault dweller coming out of a vault to experience the wasteland 200 years later after the TV show set similarly.
Yeah, okay. And it's got speaking of Yellow Jackets, has one of the leads.
Has Snacky.
Snacky McSnackface.
Yeah, Jackie McSnacky.
Yeah, of course.
She kills it, dude. She does really well. The best part about
Snacky Jackie.
It's delicious.
I was talking to someone just the other day about Yellow Jackets, recommending it actually, and I had to really wind my tongue in when I was talking about her arc in it. I was like, oh, because they'd seen Fallout but hadn't seen, you know, Yellow Jacket, and I was like, and I made a comment and I was like, ooh, that could spoil a whole show for them.
At least the first season. The cool part about it, man, the show, they cast really well.
Good.
Like, every person's a good actor.
Walton Goggins.
He's so good.
What a great name.
He's so good.
Can't deny the amazingness of that.
This is going to be, like, I know he's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is going to be his, like, pinnacle character. A character. You know when, like, someone's, like,
perfect for a character.
Perfect for the role, and also, like, just knew when they read it, they're like, I can do this. I know what I'm going to do.
Walter White, for example.
Yes. He was like, I know exactly what I'm going to be. I'm going to be the Western ghoul.
Nice.
And it's just so good. The other actor, what's his name? Aaron Moten plays Maximus, is also really well casted, I should say. And even the surrounding characters, like, it's just the story has a good mystery behind it, strong themes that they're obviously like setting up in episode one with each character that they follow through. And, you know,
it's to follow through.
And they just nice.
You too. Way to bring the tone down, Tommy.
Yeah, I love a follow through as well. You know, like a nice backhand and follow.
Oh, wow. Okay, all right. You've been practicing your tennis lessons.
Exactly.
So you'd recommend Fallout?
I would recommend it. I would also point to it as like one of the best like adaptions of a video game that I've ever seen.
Right.
Like, it's up there with The Last of Us.
Because I saw a great
meme. I feel like this is harder.
I saw a great meme that was literally like, It was a picture of the Halo. What's the main Halo guy called?
God, why you bring it up? Master Chief?
Master Chief sort of like sat on the floor, like cradling his head, been like, when a good video game adaptation comes out and they stick to the source material.
It's like so, it's heartbreaking. It's
right there.
Why couldn't Jonathan Nolan have just done Halo? It's also sci-fi. He would have loved it.
He would have had a great time.
He could have made, he's actually perfect for that.
They were talking about Westworld, actually. He wants to do a fifth series to finish Westworld. I don't think he's going to get it, though. I was watching a nostalgic video about the trajectory of that show, and they just went way off the rails.
I never finished season 3.
Don't.
But you told me season 4 was like got good again.
Season 4 was enjoyable, but yeah. it was still nowhere near the first one.
Well, it was always going to be hard if they brought it out of Westworld to keep.
There was no Westworld.
There was no way to keep it the same way. It was always going to change.
The fourth season was your kind of heady. Like it had some really cool heady themes, but yeah. It got lost in translation, man.
Well, that's the thing about like that is going back to the Severance thing. That is what I worry about for Severance. Like you take The Office out of.
Yeah,
the,
right.
Like what does that do to the show? So they can't. They're going to have to keep it in there.
They're going to have to find a way to lock them back in. All right. Yeah. So you'd recommend Fallout?
I would recommend it, man. I've watched episodes like halfway through 6.
Of 8.
And to slow myself down, I actually plopped in the game as well.
Yeah, you did.
Playing Fallout 4. I never finished it. So I just hopped back in. I was like, oh, I don't remember where I was, but whatever.
Now, there's one of the games.
76. And
there's one of the games, and I know a great spoiler for the ending of it, but I don't want to say it right now because it's a hilarious, ridiculous way to end the game. So you have... I'm going to just say it anyway. You have built companions around you, one of which is from the wastelands. So they're like... They're immune to all the radiation and stuff around you. And the ending of the game is you're forced to go into this into an irradiated room to take out a core and stop an explosion or something. And it's like, you have to do it. Your character, who is weak to the radiation, when this dude stood next to you, who could go in very happily and do it, and he's like, nope, has to be you.
And you're like, come on, dude.
You're like, what? Like, mate. You could just pop in and out. Like, so... Yeah. I hope that's the ending of this show.
I don't think so. I think they're going to be deeper.
I got a couple of cool things I've done this week, and I think we're going to have a good old chat about one of them. But first one I wanted to call out was I have been listening to Friends of the Show Don't Be a Hero podcast episode on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And I was so inspired by their words and how they were talking about. They said this might be their favorite MCU movie, full stop.
Wow.
Now, I'm not sure about that. I'd probably go top 5.
Which one is this?
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Oh.
I would say it's probably in my top 5, possibly of the post-Endgame movies, probably my favorite.
Oh, definitely. What would beat it? Spider-Man, maybe?
Maybe Spider-Man.
I would actually like Spider-Man more.
That's a hard watch when you're not in the cinema, though. I'm telling you now.
I haven't seen it again.
There are blatant pauses for like fan reactions. Like Andrew Garfield comes on screen and there's like a moment silence and you're like, oh, that's awkward.
Well, whatever, dude. Like I can get over that. Like I actually really liked that movie. I thought the premise of like him saving the villains was really good. And
yeah, I did too. But we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, so shut up, DL.
Okay. My bad.
No, I went back and I rewatched the movie. This is the true level of quality of this film, of how good it is.
Yeah.
You know, my partner has not enjoyed any of the Guardians films. Full stop. Guardians 1, I almost broke up with her because she was like, I don't like this at all. The music sucks. Like, I don't like the characters. And I was like, who the fuck am I dating? So she watched the second one. I was hopeful, you know, the love story's happening. There are movements in the characters. You know, Rocket's become more of a central figure. Nebula's in there. Same again. She fucking hated it. So when I put this one on, I'd actually avoided I didn't take it to the cinema to see this one because I knew she didn't like the first two. I hadn't sat down and watched it again because I knew she hadn't liked the originals.
How'd you convince her?
Popped it on. It was minor veto week deal. Of course it was. Okay. Popped it on. Guess what? She fucking loved it.
Nice.
She sat there laughing along with some of the jokes. She got really like emotional at the end when Rocket nearly dies. I was like, where was this emotion?
Well, there wasn't
two.
Like a cute baby raccoon in the last.
He was
one,
in all of them,
but he wasn't a cute
it's
baby
true,
raccoon.
He wasn't a cute baby raccoon, but they had a cute baby Groot in the last one. So
true.
I was like,
that is a good counter.
The fact that she was so into it made me incredibly happy, and I'm glad that she liked one of the Guardians films because that's my favorite trilogy in the MCU. End of story.
Nice.
Like the Captain America one, it's pretty close. Not quite the Guardians. You got anything else?
We've got to talk about, we've waited too long. We've got to talk about Red Rising.
It's time.
You finished. You finished Golden Sun.
So I finished Golden Sun in the future of our podcast. Yes. So that podcast is going to come out.
Really?
Yeah. So that's why I was like, I'm confused at what, like, some of the things I wanted to talk about. This, I was like, crap, I've already talked about that. So we've recorded a couple of episodes for the future. We're going away for DL's wedding. Woo woo! In a week or so, and we have a couple lined up for you. We're going to do a couple of movies which are aligning to future movies coming out. So I think we're going to do The Crow. We've already talked about, what was the other one we talked about? I've forgotten already. That's really bad. Alien 3. And we're going to try and sneak another one in if we can. But so I couldn't remember if I talked about some of the stuff. So I was like, I'm going to have to wait and hold off doing this. But we definitely didn't talk about Golden Sun last week. So
we,
for anyone who isn't across this, we have been...
Spoilers for Golden Sun.
We're going to throw spoilers out there for Red Rising and Golden Sun. We've been reading this set of books. It started as a trilogy and has expanded. DL's significantly further ahead than I am.
I'm on book 6.
You're on book 6. I just finished 7. The second book. Yeah. Okay. And let's talk Golden Sun. Yeah. So the first book ends with Darrow getting taken in to the House of Mars? House of Mars. I forgot his name. In by that house.
You mean Apollo. Yeah, sorry.
The kind of villain of the first book was his son, which made it even weirder.
Yeah.
And this book starts wildly. I expect it to be like quite a simple continuation. How does it start again?
Oh, he's just like in space?
It's just in space. A space battle. It reminds me of the first scene of the Star Trek reboot where they're in space having a space battle.
He's in like the academy, right? He's in like the space navy, basically the school for space.
Yes. Yeah. But it's like it's real life.
It's exactly like the last one for Hunger Games, but in space.
Yeah. Right. And what immediately happens is he thinks he's going to win. He's got the tactical advantage, everything, etc. And he loses. And everything goes to shit for him. His life goes right down the toilet. He has to go into hiding because people are trying to kill him. His old best mate from the last book is trying to kill him. Yeah. And it's about him restoring his honor and working his way back up in House Mars.
From being like a... With House Apollo, sorry. Mars was the one that he was in as like a house, like it's
sure.
like
but
a sorting hat house. But like, so Augustus is like basically the governor of Mars, the fucking dude. But I loved that start.
Yeah, me too.
But I was almost so angry that I didn't get to see Space School.
Give me
Space School, dude. I want to see the prequel. Space School, dude. I actually think if they ever made this into a show, they would probably make Space School more than just a chapter.
Okay. I mean, they probably should.
Because like some of those characters that you meet in Space School become pretty important, and you never really, and you're always getting their background through his like thoughts. So if you translate that to like, the film, on you kind of need to see it. So I reckon they would probably, expand it. And I think that old mate Pierce Brown would be happy to give him some material.
So the thing I liked, okay, so I'm going to give you some things I liked about this and some things I didn't.
Yeah.
The things I really liked about this.
But overall.
Really great.
Straight to didn't like. Fabulous. That's Tommy. Book. Straight to didn't like.
No, I said I'm going to give you things I liked and some things I didn't like. But I think it's things we can agree on, which is interesting.
Yes.
So the things I really liked were the continuations of the characters. I thought they grew in interesting, significant ways. I thought Darrow finding someone in Sevro that he could connect with and who was on his level was really awesome. The spoiler I talked about, or will talk about in a couple of weeks with ChatGPT, come back for our Crow episode, whenever that comes
in time out. That is.
I got spoiled for a big thing, which was who one of the main characters was.
One of the main, I guess, like there's like a figure and you don't know who, and it's like a shrouded figure. You don't know who it is.
Anyway, that got spoiled for me, but that was fine. That was actually quite a cool, I quite liked how that turned out in the books. And then that character's ending, so full spoilers for this, like the way it all goes to shit at the end, great.
Yeah.
Really like that. And it was
Red Wedding-esque.
Really?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the thing I liked about that was the fact it was clearly, what's the dude's name who's writing it?
Pierce Brown.
Pierce.
Yeah.
Pierce definitely had got like a proper book deal by this point. He was like, fuck it, I'm going to do what I want. Everyone's going to die. I'm like, I'm in.
He'd sold a bunch for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Darrow character is flawed, and I like that about him. I find that really interesting, even though he does win all the time. That's a bit annoying. The thing I don't like, it's really hard for me to say this because I like the fact the book is so fast-paced and everything is constantly happening, but everything is constantly happening. You just don't get left to take a breath. So you get put in a scene and something wild happens. 12 people die and it's right in front of his eyes and he can't do anything about it. And then instead of letting you just sit with that pain or with that feeling, whatever that is, you immediately throw into something else. Yeah. There's no time to just take it in. And I get lost with who's alive and who's still dead. By the end of the book, I'm like, I literally have no idea. Like, it's you skipped over it so fast.
It's exhausting.
Yes.
These books. Absolutely. This trilogy, the first trilogy in particular, is exhausting.
In a good way.
No, like, yeah, like in an amazing way. Like, I've never read a book that is that high. It feels like a freaking Bourne movie. But even Bourne movies have, like, you know, like calm moments.
You need those moments.
It's constant. There are like a few, and when they hit, they're so good because of it.
Right.
But I agree. Like, there's moments where I'm like, man, I wish we could have slowed this down. He eventually does.
Okay, good.
He eventually does. I think it's, you know, the fact that, like, Darrow, you know, slow moments kind of require like personal, like, vulnerability.
Sure.
And I think in the first two books, Darrow can't really be vulnerable with anyone. So it's like hard to set that up. But
he
eventually does. And I like those books for the high octane craziness that they are, but I take the point, because some of my favorite parts are the slow moments.
Right. And I was going to say exactly that. I think the slow moments you do get, so there's moments where his sort of love interest in the gold,
it's always
on a Mustang.
Yeah.
They have like a moment together where they're just in his quarters in the cabin, and
she's like training and whipping him, and it's kind of kinky almost. And it's like, what are you guys doing?
Right. And it's so personal. Yeah. And everything about it is there's all this like history and tension there, and it's so nicely done. And I just think, like, give me more of that, because he's good at it. He's really good at it.
But
then the next scene is 12 people die in front of his eyes, and you can't give me 15 more seconds to mourn those people before you kill another 100.
You can't live in, you don't get much time to live in it.
None.
I do think you get the end where he reveals himself to her.
He reveals himself.
Yes. He's cooler.
Yes. I do love that.
That was one of my favorite, like,
seeing his
scenes in anything
page.
I've ever, like, read, honestly.
Yeah.
That whole, because, like, I was convinced that he was gonna Ragnar, didn't even talk about, like, how the world expands vastly.
Yes.
In this book, I think, is a really good, he does a really good job of that. But that whole scene with, like, Mustang, Ragnar, and him, where you don't know what's gonna happen, like, was one of my favorite scenes in the whole book. It's also a slow
series.
Scene.
Yeah.
Also intense, but a slow scene. I think that he does his best work with those two in those slow moments, for sure.
Completely agree with that.
And I think 100%. I think you'll like the other books too, because they slow down. The problem is some of the characters, I think, in the fourth book in particular, take a while to get going.
Okay.
So you get multiple perspectives.
I kind of feel like the third book is set up for multiple perspectives. Like, it might not go that way that soon.
Mm.
But so the ending of the book, full spoilers, is that Darrow's character is captured by his enemies. So he's fighting the Sovereign the whole way through, who is effectively the ruler. The ruler of the galaxy from the moon. Is that right?
Yeah, well, she's the Sovereign is, like, basically the Emperor.
Yes.
But
she's a dictator who's trying to take control.
She's a dictator. There is a Senate, and they can kind of keep her in check, but she's kind of basically consolidated power to the point where she is kind of a dictator. And she rules over the, I think they call them, like, the arch-emperors or something of each planet.
Either way.
So she's the big boss.
Either way.
And she rules from Luna.
Yeah. Augustus, his family, the House of Mars, try and take back some of their power with, obviously, Darrow leading.
Yeah.
They think they've won. And again, never giving you a moment to breathe. They all get red weddinged. And he is left in, like, a comatose state almost, because he's been poisoned. And
betrayed
by everyone. All of his friends are dead. My favorite fucking character, Lorne, got killed. I was so annoyed. So I think it's set up for multiple personalities, POVs, in the next book, if he wanted to go that way, because Mustang's gone one direction, Sevro's gone another, Ragnar's gone another, he's got his thing happening. If he wanted to, it's right there.
It is. I'm surprised he doesn't.
Thanks for ruining it for me.
I think I've already told you. The multiple perspectives happening in the next
In
the next series. Or the next trilogy.
High recommendation from both of us. You can probably guess by the way we're talking about it. It's got a lot of potential for on-screen.
Do you think? I think it has a lot of potential. I think it could be so hard.
It could be so good. Also. But, like, look at Fallout. Fallout is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
They've made it into something amazing.
Yeah, but I feel like...
You just need the right writers.
I think
right
it is possible. I just think Fallout is easier. It's cheaper, and it's easier.
Like, the first season wouldn't be that expensive.
No, no, it's the ones after.
Yeah.
But it, you're right.
Space stuff.
So it gives you the chance to like nail it,
but it's
get an audience, yeah. And then...
It's perfectly built for that. So like, if the first season slaps...
It's kind of like Game of Thrones in that way.
Right. And then it would build and build and build, and there's plenty to go from there. I wonder if they would try and build in the multiple POVs earlier.
They have to. I think it's a must.
Because it would be weird to get halfway through and go, boom, there's more.
I think it's a must because it also gives you, it's how you build the world.
Yeah, okay.
Because so much of this stuff in the books goes on in Darrow's head. He's always mourning about something, whining, thinking about something. And you're like, how do you put that to the page?
The worst bit is when he's mourning and he's still in the middle of the action.
Yeah.
Just like,
and he's just like, I dread the people's blood of my way. And you're like, dude, just like focus on. Just,
yeah.
Dude, not Mustang's dying. Right there. Just give her some attention.
Just don't die.
Yeah.
I think the worst bit of Golden Sun, very quick, the worst and best bit in equal parts, was the part when they were infiltrating, I forgot the name of the city on Mars, and they come up through the mud. A small team of them come up to take it over.
Just
and
get
like
wrecked.
An EMP
just get
that takes them all out. And they're just getting absolutely owned. And he gets like cut up. He's like naked effectively.
That's when he gives Ragnar the razor.
Yeah.
Right.
For the first time.
There's so many sick parts in that book. There's so many.
And there are
moments.
So many elements of it that you think like he's made a mistake there, like giving him the razor or the thing he does to, I've forgotten the poet guy's name.
Bob.
Yeah.
Rogue Fabian or something.
Rogue.
His last name's Rock, Bob something.
Whatever.
Rogue. Yeah.
How what he does to him, like terrible choices. He makes terrible choices that you think he gets away with all the way through, but he doesn't.
Even some of the ones that you mentioned, you don't even realize have consequences later in the series.
Right. Well, exactly.
Which is really cool.
And you think that, and there's lines of dialogue in the book that make you think that's going to come back later because that doesn't 100% make sense in this instance.
And you, but you also understand like why he decides to do certain, because you're like, I mean, like his mindset isn't thinking about. Yeah. You know, decades later or whatever it might be, his mindset is like, how do I free my people? How do I basically create a civil war?
Completely.
Which he achieved.
That would have been a great segue, but I'm not quite finished with this book yet. Let's come back to that. Very, very quickly, the one thing I did want to ask you was about, let's say hypothetically this does become like a TV show, which they've been talking about for a while. Like, how do you do that, man? Because my head immediately goes to, having watched Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, you remember the gold... people,
I know,
literally from that film.
Yeah,
like, ah man, if they did that, that'd
that's
be so bad.
That's why I think it's hard, because it could be goofy. It could be super goofy. It could be like that mixed with Gundam and you're just like, what the fuck is this? You know what I mean? Like, they need to nail the like the glory, the medieval-ish style, like Roman shit, you know, the whole culture
in
of
the
that
first one. They
need to nail the honor and the like the whole you know, what's the word for it? The dressings of it all.
Sure.
And like the architecture and all that kind of.
I just imagine Will Poulter being the main character.
Yeah, maybe you just make them all gold. No, I think they have to just make them like the golds are obviously going to be like bigger and like super ripped and just obviously taller.
So
and,
Will Poulter then.
And really beautiful. I don't think they make them gold. I think they just give them like make like tan.
Yeah.
And
maybe
and,
gold, like, maybe gold eyes.
You could do gold. Oh, for sure, you do gold eyes and you do like golden hair.
Basically, Hitler's perfect race.
Yeah, you make it. You make them super Aryan and tan, and I think that works.
You reckon that's the theme of the books?
Sure hope not.
I do love the Obsidians. I'd love to see how that would translate. There's so much intrigue in this and so many different facets of the society, so much that even I'm still processing.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to see
how he hasn't revealed everything yet.
A good brain would bring that to screen. I think, like, you know, you'd need a good brain.
I wonder who
would
do it.
John Nolan.
I was going to say a John Nolan. I was going to say even a D&D because all the books will be out. But now that you've been saying that what's it called isn't that good.
So bad.
Then maybe
finished it.
I was kind of like,
talk about it in the future. So
yeah,
I want
to Three Body
now.
Problem, if they nail that, then I'm like, okay, maybe give him a chance.
No.
But they did Troy. I do think, call me crazy, I'm like, I'd call them. If I'm the person doing it, I would call them.
I wouldn't
give it to them.
Not after seeing a Three Body Problem.
I would call them.
No.
But
it needs HBO money.
It needs more than HBO money, probably. It needs like Amazon
money. It needs the prestige of HBO.
It does.
Like, it needs it that thought and that love.
I would be stoked with HBO, but I worry that HBO is like not a hyper, like, you know, Amazon has like AWS. That's why they can spend $1 billion Lord of the Rings.
Apple, same.
Yeah. I guess the point is like, any of the big streamers, as long as it's like, you know, they get the right showrunner, it will be amazing.
Yeah, and it all depends who they work for as well, who they're aligned with.
Well, and the author is pretty involved in it. But yeah, who's your favorite character?
Probably Severo.
Yeah.
Like him a lot. Well, it was Lorne, but he's not around anymore, is he?
Lorne's good, but he's you don't get him much. Lorne's almost like good because of the like myth around him. I might be a Cassius.
Really?
Mainly because I like what he does with the character.
Well, he didn't.
There's more to do. There's more to see.
Yeah, he didn't do a lot in this last.
Keep reading.
Of course, I'm gonna take a mini break. Read something a little bit different.
You feckless Quim.
You didn't bring the book over, so I can't help it.
Feckless Quim.
Guys, we've been talking about Golden Sun for way too long. Yeah, I was gonna make a joke about the Nintendo DS video game, which I played when I was a kid. Really great game if you like RPGs. I didn't. I forgot. Guys, if there's anything we haven't talked about that you recommend we do, please hit us up. We love it when you do. Hit us up at Podcast Assemble on Instagram or thepodcastassemble@gmail.com. If you want, you can find us on YouTube, Podcast Assemble. You can just drop us a comment on one of our videos. Leave us a like, leave us a subscribe. We'd love it if you did. Send us memes, send us news, send us reviews. But DL, do you want to preface our main topic?
I do.
It's the main topic theme.
This week, we are talking about Civil War.
Woo-hoo!
From director Alex Garland, English lad. Previously, Deus Ex Machina, the best AI movie ever made.
We've done a podcast about that. You should go back and listen to that.
Annihilation as well.
Did we also do Annihilation? I think we've done both.
He did Annihilation. And
no,
there was,
we. I think we've oh, talked we
have,
about
yes,
both.
Yes. We definitely have. There's another one he's done. What is the other one he's done?
He's done all, like, majority of his movies are fantastic. Some of my absolute favorites. Do you have a stupid plot summary for
I do, man. I
think ours are going to be similar this
week. I have two, actually. The Last of Us, but instead of zombies, Trump is the bad guy. And instead of stealth kills, we get photo ops. But this is my real one. In the not so distant future, we follow Joel, Ellie, the dump truck, Callie, as they and Kirsten Dunst's resting bitch face cross the war-torn countryside of America to disrupt and put at risk the life of every soldier they interact with for the gram.
I like that. Mine's not terribly different. Mine's just The Last of Us meets the road in an engrossing road trip movie about the passing of a baton, which in this case happens to be the destroyed world to the younger generation.
Truth.
I mean, You couldn't have put it any more simply. So as you say, yeah, this is Alex Garland. This has a really, really good cast. People who are really well cast in this. But Nick Offerman as a president.
Very good.
It just wasn't enough of him for me.
I agree. I need more of
him. Yeah. I think it was more of him in the trailer than the actual film. Kirsten Dunst, you said, as Lee. Wagner Moura as Joel, who everyone will know as Pablo Escobar from Narcos. Jesse Plemons was in this. I thought he was so good for the tiny amount of screen time he got.
He was really good.
Yeah. Kaylee Spaney was in this as Jesse. Jesse was, I mean, if she would have been great in The Last of Us. She would have been awesome in that, right?
Yes. Yes. She would have been my Ellie.
Yeah, me too.
Like, how did they not find her?
I think she looks more like Ellie than Ellie does.
Yeah, no, she does. Know?
And she's got the spunk about her. She's like quite sassy.
She's actually the right casting. They fucked up.
I mean, yeah, maybe. And again, Stephen McKinley Henderson is back from Bo is Afraid and Dune Part 1 as Sammy. Do you want to give us the plot of this? Like, what happens in this deal?
Net, we're in the not so distant future. I mean,
it's 5 minutes from now.
It really is The Last of Us.
Yeah.
I think
probably a little further forward.
I mean,
but that's
not really. It could have been nothing in The Last of Us indicates that it's farther than today.
Except Joel's gray hair. Also, the main dude guy in this is also called
Joel. His name is Joel.
It's just
the main girl looks like Ellie and her name is Kelly. Callie.
Jesse.
No, but I mean the actress.
Oh, Kaylee, yeah.
Kaylee. It like rhymes with Ellie.
Close enough.
And they're literally the whole freaking story is them crossing a post-apocalyptic America.
And it's
America.
Got Nick Offerman in it.
Yes.
It's the same.
Yes.
It's the same chick.
Anyway,
in
the not so distant future, yeah, we follow Joel, Ellie, and the team.
Ellie. No, we don't. We follow Callie. Lee, Joel, and Jesse. And Sammy.
We follow two war experienced journalists who basically have a goal to head to the front line of a civil war in America. To try and get an interview with the president. They get a couple tag-alongs. They get a young, aspiring war journalist and war photographer who is played by Jesse, right?
Callie Spaney, yeah.
And then the second edition is our guy that's been in every single freaking A24 movie ever, who kind of plays a more wizened journalist.
Yeah, I'd say so.
More like, hey, he's kind of at the other end of his
Sammy.
Career. As they kind of cross America and run into various different forces that kind of represent the divisive state of the media in America today.
Yeah, right.
And more, they're basically kind of mostly alongside the United Western Front, mm-hmm. which is California and Texas with a bit of Florida. I didn't get, that wasn't really clear to me. Is Florida just doing its own thing? Anyway, they're all succeeded in fighting.
I think that's kind of the point. I think it's like, so the basic overview of this movie then is that the president has forced through legislation to give himself a third term, which real bad apparently, and has been doing horrible things to the American people, so they've turned against him.
Yeah. Civil war, drone attacks, president overstayed his welcome, obviously inspired by some of the January 9, whatever it is, 6th stuff.
Got to have some showing on this, right?
And yeah, they're basically running through America during this, the ending, kind of the last throes of a civil war.
Yeah. Now it's interesting because straight up, I'm going to talk about how much I enjoyed this film, but I have heard people saying that they don't love it for reasons along the lines of it doesn't go far enough one way or the other. So it sits kind of in the middle. And I know
exactly what I asked it to do.
I know Alex got, me too. Yeah. And I'm very happy with that. Yeah. But almost give people have, like, quoted it being like apolitical, as in like it sits, it doesn't give you anything either way. But that's what I kind of wanted about this. It's about the importance of journalism in the time of conflict, and about how, you know, these people are becoming desensitized, or have already become desensitized, or are so far down the line they don't even really see the violence anymore. The stages of journalist almost in the car. And I found the exploration of that way more fascinating than there being some big political specific statement in this.
It's just like we've ranted about this many times. Like, why do you need the director to tell you what to believe? That's not the point. The point is for them to like point out the things to think about.
Ask questions.
Like, in a way that makes you think about both sides and ask questions and come up with your answer, but not force fed an answer.
Right.
And the fact that people criticize it as apolitical is just like so annoying. It's just like such a representation of like the times, unfortunately.
And I mean, like, look, I'm not the person to talk to about political state in the USA. Absolutely not. But the thing I liked about this was the ambiguity. Like, you're thrown into a world, the war is basically over, or at least it is coming into the final throes, and it's war torn, and you have no idea who is actually part of the war, part of the, you know, the services fighting in it, who are just racists, who are just there, people who just like violence, so they're trying to kill anyone who goes by. Does it inevitably matter? Like, that's the questions I liked about this. And, you know, Alex Garland's a fucking master at posing questions that you're almost not supposed to be able to answer.
Yeah. And in a way that you know, is entertaining.
Yes.
That's like what he's so good at. Like, I think we talked about this like in the lead up to why we thought it would be good. I think it was in our most anticipated or something.
Yeah, probably.
And I remember saying, like, I hope this is the guy that's going to be able to thread the needle on this in a way that doesn't make it political, but makes it super interesting to think about how it applies to politics.
Now, and let's rewind the tapes and just ask who had it on their anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, you had it because you played it. The point being, he did.
I mean,
he did.
Too right. And I mean, like, the thing I like, and there's a parallel here between him and Denis Villeneuve, is that they kind of made some amazing sci-fi movies and got a little bit sort of rolled into that as their thing. I feel like they've maybe been typecast somewhat. But you look at Villeneuve's history, you look at Prisoners, like, pick a movie prior to, you know, Arrival and Blade Runner. And then you look at this from you know, Alex Garland. These are real directors who have got like a clear vision, know what they want to say, and like a really awesome visual art style. Like, the way this is shot is fascinating. His use of like negative space, his use of dark, his use of light, his use of sound as almost part of a visual is fascinating. It's the way that you have to like clench away from it and how the scene changes while you're closing your eyes. Amazing. Like, what did you think of the beat down America that he's presented here?
I thought it was really, really, I think a lot of that was like a message as well, in a good way. And it, like, not an investigation of,
right,
hey, this is what warmongering is. Welcome to the other end of it, America. Like it, in a way to like make kind of like, because you know a bunch of Americans are going to go watch this film.
Yes.
And it is a way to like kind of make you intimately look at, hey, what would it look like?
What would it really be like
when you actually are in a war-torn place? And how does that look in America?
Yeah.
And
I think Americans are so far away from the real wars. They can chat shit and be like,
100%.
People who just want
to
shoot.
So it's a good
neighbor,
way to, like, you know? It's a good way to make it more intimate to them and like investigate, yeah, like, hey, like, what's the word I'm trying to find? It's kind of like display it in a way that hits home intimately for them that might also draw attention to the broader military industrial complex that America runs in.
And that's sort of mirrored in Lee Kirsten Dunst's character. You know, she has this, there's a great quote from her in this where she says something along the lines of, you know, like, I've been to all these war zones and I always thought I was sending back a warning with my journalism, back to the theme of, you know, like, journalism being super important. And yet it didn't hit home. You know what I mean? It's like the ignorance of some of these people. I really like the world building in this on the scale of like broken America, because there was, not only was there some really awesomely beautiful shots, there were some really interesting ones. Mm. And there was one that I just caught it in time. So there was, it's obviously a road trip movie, so they're going through all these different areas and seeing different things. And there's a bit where they just go under a bridge and they linger on this bridge for slightly longer than you'd expect them to. And it was really random because it just had like Steelers or something like spray painted.
Ghost Pittsburgh or something.
Like that, right? And like, I was staring at that the whole time. And I just happened to look to the right at the very end of the shot. And there were two people hung from the end of the bridge. And you're so like taken away with the normality of it being like such a juxtaposition to the rest of the film. Like, oh, this is normal. It's like someone supporting their sports team. You don't even notice there's people hung there. I wonder if that's another social commentary on the desensitization to violence, that you're almost becoming that while watching this film.
Yeah.
Because it's quite violent, man.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of that. I think that's like, that frame was totally intentional. And it's like, hey, how do we...
100%.
How do we, you know, like, there's a lot to be said to, like, don't look it over here, Skid Row. Yep. Go watch the Rams. Game.
Yeah.
Like, you're happy. You're like, you got your Netflix. Like, don't look over there. And I think there's other statements like around that same thing where it's like that town that's untouched. It definitely is meant to be an allusion to the politically apathetic.
Yeah.
Like the people that are like, I don't get anything out of this divisiveness. I don't fuck you. I don't participate.
Care. Yeah.
And I don't think he like necessarily makes a statement on whether that's bad or good. He definitely asks the question, is it bad or good, through the characters that obviously do care about this because they've devoted their life to documenting it. But, you know, the question is asked like, do you guys know there's a civil war? He's like, yeah. I mean, it seemed best not to get involved.
Yeah.
And you look at and you see that they're all enjoying their time in this place and you're like, well, there may be truth to that.
Yeah.
Like, these people seem to be in a better spot.
They're having a great time.
So I found that, like, there was a lot of commentaries like that subtly done in little scenes that drove the narrative, but also, like, made you think about, you know, something beyond just the frame or the sequence of events.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. And I think the performances really captured that in the movie. Like, so you had not only, like, outside of the people who were, you know, like, happy and jolly in this town and, you know, like, living their best lives. You have the complete, like I say, juxtaposition of, you know, the characters we've been introduced to. So I think Kirsten Dunst's character, much as I dislike her as an actor, I thought she brought a real coldness to this role that really was, you know, reflected in this the whole time. Mirrored, you know, the dissociation of normal people back to them in such an interesting way. It was fascinating. Good for her, man. Like, she's back.
She did well. But also, I think this role was perfect for her.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
It was
for her age and for like you know, like where she's at in her career and for just her.
Yes. The thing that I wish this movie had have done more of is diving into exploring how it affected her. So obviously, she's been a war journalist for a long time. The introduction to her career at the beginning of the film is brutal.
Yeah.
So you see like these snippets of her in different war zones, seeing people getting killed, a dude just getting lit on fire in front of her.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. And one of the things you don't get a lot of is, you know, getting time to sit with her and see how that almost PTSD like affects her in the moment. So there is a moment where she's in the bath in the hotel room and, you know, she's clearly overwhelmed by it all, but it doesn't explore it much further. I would have liked to have seen just a little more of her
background, you know, or
not even background, just how it's affecting her, because the movie crescendos, and we'll stay away from spoilers at this point. She's really struggling in the final scenes of the movie because of what's happening around her.
Yeah.
I'd have liked there to be some build to that. And it didn't really. You just saw this one scene of her having a hard time in the bath.
I don't know. I kind of disagree.
That bath water was probably cold as well.
Yeah, it was cold. The generator. They were on the generator.
They were. Oh my God. Imagine a cold bath.
I mean, dude, just like beside the point of her development, like talk about a terrible person to go on a road trip with.
Oh my God.
God, could you imagine?
So dour. She wouldn't even buy snacks.
Well, it's like pulling blood out of a stone, dude, to get anything other than a look the mom that your mom gives you when you like bounce the ball in the house. Like, Jesus. I thought that her arc was well done.
I agree.
I thought that they gave you quite a bit there. I think the part, I understand your point, but I also think that like they just did it in a way where they showed you. And I thought that without, we actually can't talk about some of the stuff that we need to fully explore that, because it's a spoiler.
We will get there.
So I'll wait. But
I do like that she was paired off with Joel, who, as I say, you'll know, is Pablo Escobar. It was very distracting, his face on screen the whole time.
And then you get him, who's like just like high
he's
all
like
the time.
He's like a thrill seeker. He's just running into war zones like, holy, like when he's high, like, yeah, let's go and check out them guns. I really like that pairing, because she's obviously the grounded down to earth one. He's clearly the all action, you know, let's fucking get in the middle of this. Like, it was an interesting dynamic.
And like, she's all uptight and he's like, all right, now let's just smoke a bunch of weed.
She should have joined him maybe one time. It might fucking help.
I don't understand how, in God's name, like the one thing that like would pull me out of this is like the military just put up with them just like getting in the way while they're in full on in a tactical gear. It's not real. There is no way.
But there are pictures in war zones of similar things.
Oh, there are people
that got there.
For sure, there are people that go to war zones and take pictures, but there's absolutely no way they're like behind them while they're in cover, like getting in the way of them trying to execute their, like the Marines are not going to let a photographer put another Marine at risk.
Sure.
And multiple times that happens during the film.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So that took me out of it a bit, because I'm like, the United States military does not work that way, dude. But it was cool. It was like the action was crazy, man.
I mean, the action was awesome. We'll talk about that. I just wanted to ask you before we get there, what do you think of Jesse's character?
I think she was well acted, and I think it's like obviously what they're doing there is like a passing of the torch kind of kind of style dynamic, and I think it was actually really well done.
I liked it. Yeah. She starts off as like almost like a bratty teenager who Kirsten Dunst effectively saves, right? Like
in a few ways, yeah.
Yeah, I really like the opening scene of the,
and she saves her in a way. Like
she
finds her humanity. There's a lot of neatly tied bows in this film.
There are certainly things. I didn't love her character. She made some really fucking stupid decisions. And I mean, she's young.
What, you mean the kid?
Yeah, like the bit where she just jumps into the other car for no reason. You're like, nobody does. Like,
but that's the point.
You're in this, no, but like, you're in this situation and you know how fucked up it is. You don't know that guy in that car. You're like,
well, they knew him though.
Did they though? They knew the guy who jumped into their car.
Yeah. It's assumed they kind of knew. I don't know. Maybe not. But the point, I guess that's the point, though, is youthful, like bliss.
She was taking a moment to be useful.
Yeah, like okay. That is her character. That
was
is
shattered
like,
by
that is
the
what
next person I wanted to talk about, Jesse Plemons. Absolutely shattered. He was, that was a, okay, so the one thing I want to talk about in this is the tension building in this, and that scene with Jesse Plemons, who just happens to be Kirsten Dunst's husband. No other reason why he'd be in this film, none at all. To be fair, he's an amazing actor.
No, he's in a lot of stuff, yeah.
That scene, like the tension build, the slow burn of it. Oh my God,
crazy.
It was interesting.
Crazy.
And like there's snippets of it in the trailer, and we'll probably save it for spoilers, but like that character and how they build that in a short amount of time to being so terrifying was fascinating.
The tension's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really
awesome. I loved it.
And that sort of, there wasn't much action in that scene either. There was like little flashes of it.
No, there wasn't. It was more just the setup and his acting.
Yeah. We'll definitely talk about that in a minute, I reckon. But like you wanted to mention action before. I think that action, this is really well
done. The gunshots are just like real. Like you feel like you're in war.
So they actually used full blanks. So normally in a movie to save the ears of humans, they would use half blanks.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, they used full ones to get like the full pop of it. And it really like...
You can hear it.
Right.
You can hear the difference.
The sound
for sure.
Mixing in this was not a Christopher Nolan film.
No, no. I mean, to be fair, Christopher Nolan, you can hear things. You just can't hear the dialogue. There just wasn't that much talking in the war scenes here. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Mr. Protagonist.
Yeah, seriously, man.
But the action, I think, builds throughout the movie in compelling ways. And you see different acts of violence sort of laid out, none more vigorous than another particularly. I mean, of course, there is a big ending action movie scene.
Dude, there was like enough action in this that like my estimation that like this was going to like make us think there was action. Mm. And then it actually just being an A24 flip where it's not was wrong.
Same.
There was a lot of action.
And it was but done in ways that weren't necessarily like, it wasn't like big action scenes the whole way through. There was action set pieces, but not like 100 people on 100 people all the time. Like yeah. The interesting thing I talked about before was that at times you don't know who's on what side. And there's a great scene when they're driving just through like Winter Wonderland type thing.
Oh, that was weird.
And there was a dude with a sniper rifle shooting at them, and they just stopped and got out and hid. And there were two army dudes on the floor, and they were like, "What side are you on?" And the guy's like, "Someone's trying to kill us. We're trying to kill them. Yeah. Shut the fuck up." It was great.
That's what I wanted all the military to do to these people. Instead, they like totally let them around. Like, I was just surprised at how they were like besties.
I think little moments like that though,
that was great.
There were funny moments in this too, like really darkly satirical moments, things that like only work if you're like completely immersed in the world of this.
Totally.
And that scene specifically really stood out to me. I thought like the two army guys on the floor were awesome.
It was good comedy, subtle comedy there.
I think there's a couple of little bits to touch on before we move on. I had one thing that really screamed at me the whole way through the movie that annoyed me. It was like, why didn't they have a video camera with them at all times as well? Or just, you know, like some sort of digital camera. And I know they're journalists.
Just the young one didn't.
She had her one big camera, but you can't just look that around. But the dude, like Pablo Escobar in this, he didn't have a camera. He didn't have a way to record the president's last words.
You would have liked to him to have a camera, I hear you. But the other ones, she had a digital, and she just had a lens with it and she could take it off. The only one that had film was the first, because they made it clear. They like talked about it.
I must have missed that.
The kid had film, but nobody had a video camera.
Yeah, and I found that really weird. And yeah,
if you're gonna interview, well, maybe he just didn't take it out because he was so like, oh my god, shell shocked, like when all that.
He had a lot of time he could have taken it. Yeah. And just little things like that took me out of it a little bit. And there was a tropey maybe thing that was in there that was they would cut like pictures of what they were taking into the film.
That.
I don't know, man. I liked it in the beginning. I thought it was a nice setup, but when they were still doing it all the way through to the end, I was like, oh, come on, guys. Like, that's enough of this. Anyway, DL, I really want to get into spoilers with you on this. So do you have any tones and or themes that we haven't talked about?
Look, I think we talked about a lot of them. It's kind of, they explore how big events can affect the complexities of human relationships and really how you define your place in the world and how you find meaning. It's also like a strong, like as we said, passing of the torch film where
of course.
It's like an investigation of like, I really do think it's an investigation of like idealism and the life cycle of idealism as seen through those characters, right? The wise man, I keep forgetting his name, but A24, Sammy to Pablo Escobar down to Ellie.
I feel like Sammy, Kirsten, and Jesse are the. I mean, like, I always think Joel's like the odd one out because he's not really part of it. He's not really the journalist. He's sort of like the driver almost.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's the stages of that evolution. It's like being young and dumb and ready to do anything and then having all of that weight on you while you're still trying to do it and being jaded and new experiences weighing you down further. And then you're the old man who's somehow survived and done it all. And it's like, how do you continue? Like, it's a tough question.
Well, and that's the beauty of like, she finds, I think that Kirsten Dunst's character finds her humanity again, not like her humanity, but like her ability to like care to like find meaning again through the youthful character. And I think that they did that really well. Had a nice bow on it.
There was a really awkward moment in this when they were talking about Pablo Escobar hitting on the young girl. And I was like, oh.
You're the one that called it hitting.
No, they said it in the film.
Oh, did they?
They were, like, the when they met the other two journalists when they jumped between cars. Oh, he was real drunk and he was hitting on the young girl.
Oh, they did say that.
I was like, oh, all right.
I thought he said something like, and he let loose where you guys are going or something.
Nah, he definitely said that. Jeffa, my turn's theme, just very quickly. I also, to add to that, the desensitization to violence, the importance of an impartial media, ambiguity of who is simply violent versus who's actually involved in the war. I found that super compelling. Mm-hmm. Two best and two worst?
Yeah,
Lots
of little arcs and metaphors with nice like bows and subtle foreshadowing in it.
Yep. I mean, some of it wasn't so subtle. We'll talk about that in a minute. Some of it was just really blatant.
I don't know. I thought the whole part where she says, if I die, what would you post the photo of me?
Yeah.
I thought that
not
was
that subtle.
No, I thought it was subtle.
Okay.
The way that, because they were talking. Okay. Nah, dude, it was subtle. That part, he'll disappoint you, right? That whole commentary about when they're trying to get the interview to the president and he's like, Adolphe, all these guys, they're useless.
I like that too.
All those little like nuances. I love the cinematography and I thought the action was awesome.
Nice. I had the cinematography too. That was like one of my favorite things about Alex Garland, his use of negative space. It's just chef's kiss. It's like the highest order. Mm. The world, like I felt, I don't know how they did it. I'd like to see more behind the scenes stuff about this because that like a lot of the sets felt very real for the most part. They must have done a lot of action stuff. It didn't feel like they were on the volume. You know, the thing they used for all the Star Wars where it's like, two people stood about waist height on camera and they can't go too far away from each other otherwise they get lost in the background. None of it felt like that. It all had depth. It all had like grit to it. I'd love to see more about that. I'll probably watch up on that app when we're finished. And just the use of silence in this, the fact that you can pierce a movie like this with such deep silence and boom, you get like a gunshot or whatever it is.
Or
even like when the Pablo Escobar is like screaming because, you know, he's lost two friends. And
that was silent, yeah.
The way he flips, you know, the use of sound versus three the friends. Non-use of sound, he just is so good at that. Do you have any worst?
Yeah, I talked a bit about it. It did take me out of it, like how much credence they were giving to like the photographers. It's like, dude, literally they're at war, like get out of their way. And then you think, you know,
help me to help you.
It's just a bit much. And then the I thought we should have gotten more from the president.
That's one of mine,
you know, without like, and maybe he just didn't want to make too many statements about it, but he already made the statement that there's like that the guy XYZ guy did this, like he's gone for the third term, that happened. So it's like, go figure out a way to like make that person interesting and make why they did that interesting.
Yeah.
Don't make a political statement. You know?
I do have the same, but I think thinking about it, I think it's quite intentional. And
it is intentional. I kind of would have liked it.
The very beginning of the film is him on the TV or whatever, making a statement that, you know, we're winning the war and whatever. And are they winning the war?
Nope.
Like, you know what I mean? And then you very quickly are told that, no, they're absolutely fucking not. I find it almost intentional that he sort of segregates himself more and more and more. And he hadn't done an interview in 14 months, et cetera. And yeah, I think they could have done more with that character.
Well, I guess it definitely is. Maybe I'm like talking myself out of it now because like the whole point was like he'll disappoint you. Like what, he has nothing to say.
Sure.
But I guess like, you know,
even having that on repeat, like around the, you know what I mean?
Other parts of it, you know, like or something more. Anyway, you get the feeling watching this that he literally wrote this movie during COVID while he was watching The Last of Us.
I mean, very maybe he could have done.
I think it's like there's too many similarities.
Yeah,
those are my two. I couldn't come up with three.
I had two more that I have already sort of expanded upon, but like, you know, I got a bit over the cutting of the static images. Didn't care for that as much towards the end. I felt like it was a bit done by then. And then I just wanted more exploration of that Kirsten Dunst PTSD. I thought she was the perfect person for that role. And I'd have liked to have seen more of that through the film. DL, talk to me then. Can you guess for me the current IMDb score for this?
I saw it. 7.6.
It is 7.6.
Yeah.
See, that feels low.
It's just the losers that are like, yeah, they didn't condemn Trump. Like, shut up, dude.
All right. Can you guess what's happening?
85.
82.
Okay.
Okay. And finally then, Letterboxd, which is all user reviews and is always 3.6, but it's never 3.6. What is it?
3.6.
3.7.
Oh.
I think that's low, man. Like all those scores, even 82 from Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes, I'm surprised by.
Yeah, it's always, usually
normally
high.
Get the A24 fanboys jumping into something. So 82, little surprised by. But now what we do is we do our famous rating system, which is this better or worse than the most average movie we know and why? DL.
Yeah.
Tell me why this is better than Aquaman 2018.
It is better for all the reasons I've already talked about. It's a more material, it's a more worthy subject to make material on.
Yes.
Who cares about octopuses playing drums? And it's
but you telling
better
me,
acted, more.
So if there wasn't octopus playing drums in this, it wouldn't be more exciting with Mark Wahlberg next to
100%. I'm saying that that's what this movie needed. No, it's better. It's better executed in every way. Better acting. I mean, like you tell me why it isn't.
No, I had a great time with this movie. Like, I mean, if Jason Momoa was in it too, I can imagine it'd been a lot better.
Oh, God.
Thor. No, I'm kidding. This is
he's never played a serious role in his life.
Couldn't tell you.
Name one.
Couldn't tell you. Khal Drogo.
Yes. That is the only one.
I named one, though. What do I win?
You did well.
Spoilers?
Yeah, let's do it.
Everyone fucking dies.
Yeah. Wise guy dies, which leads Kirsten Dunst to really evaluate her life.
Sammy dies, which is the first one, really, of the knocking over the dominoes in this.
Yeah, so does the guy from Hong Kong, but nobody ever talked about him.
Didn't really matter. The wise old leader of the group gets killed saving them.
I mean, not running either. They're like, oh, you can't come, you're gonna die because you're fat, you're
too old.
And he literally just gets shot driving. Fucking irony of it all.
I think I turned to you at that point and said, well, if it wasn't that, it would have been diabetes.
It is true. Old mate has risk factors for sure.
And the movie effectively culminates with the Western Front, as they call them, which we should have said a million times, storming DC, getting to the gates of the Capitol. And like you said, it kind of mirrors the real life of what happened in DC, but it is an actual army with proper weapons.
Yes.
And Kirsten Dunst and Pablo Escobar, I'll stop calling them that eventually, and Jesse are there with them the whole way.
Yes.
The thing I liked about that scene is the fact that the president tries to distract everyone by sending out, like, this is how much of a dick this president is.
Yeah, dude.
He sends out his staff
to negotiate
in his car.
Oh yeah,
to distract
the
troops, and they're all like, they just. And at that point, you get to the, you know, like, have the troops gone too far? How far is too far? And they're just killing the staff. And Lee, so Kristen,
did you think they were not gonna?
I thought they were just gonna kill everyone who was in there.
I was like, at this point, everyone's dead. If it's gotten this far, everyone's dead.
It could have been like a suicide bomb, you know what I mean? It could have been anything. Like, it wouldn't have been, but you know what I mean? They had to kill them at that, had to put them down. Kirsten Dunst's character realizes that this is a diversion, goes direct to the White House. How did you feel about Kirsten Dunst's death scene?
I liked it a lot.
Cool, you like to see Kirsten Dunst die. Good to hear. DL, you are now on a list.
Her resting bitch face finally rested.
And it was very resting in that scene.
Yeah, it did rest. It found peace.
It did. I liked... So the kind of idea is that she saved. So Jesse, in her, you know, vibrance of youth, tries to get the perfect shot of like a corridor where there's gunfire and
like idiotic.
She's obviously going to get shot, so Kirsten jumps in the way. But Kirsten had a bulletproof vest on.
Okay, like yes, but she's dead.
Really?
Mate, a bulletproof vest. Like if you take an AR-15, like you're.
But they didn't. They only had handguns.
They had submachine guns.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Missed that.
Like, I mean, it doesn't matter. The point is, they wanted her dead. She died.
I mean, the point is that then the action continues.
Yes.
Right.
Dude, it's crazy. No one even, like, even old mate just, like, didn't even look. Pablo Escobar just, like, saw Gisette, pulled her up and left her. He's like, all right, you're the new one. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
tag you in.
Yeah, it was pretty cooked, actually.
It was. I mean, that sort of culminates all of the themes of the movie. Really.
So, does she, but I guess what we're skipping is. She saves her, and while she's falling, she takes the picture
of her death.
You see her in death getting shot, Kirsten Dunst. And I guess in that moment, the Padawan becomes the master. And I would argue...
There's no one else to be there, so she must
ask,
be.
True. I would ask, do you think she posts the picture?
Great question. I think so.
I think she 100%. I think she 100% does.
Well, not only to gain notoriety, but memorializing her idol who she's been with the whole
time.
And
I think it's all in the first line.
Right.
She says to Kirsten Dunst when they first kind of finally connect, because she's a bitch to her for like the first hour of the movie.
She's a bitch to her the whole
movie. When they first finally connect, like she's like, hey, let's go take some pictures, like almost like as a mentor thing. Let's go take some pictures of this like downed helicopter.
Pictures.
And she asks, like, if I died, would you take a pic? Because she's like, you're going to die. Like, this is a bad idea.
Yeah. And
she's like, if I die,
it just,
she's, if I die, would you take a picture of me? And Kirsten Dunst says, what the fuck do you think? So my answer to did she post a picture is what the fuck do you think? 100% right. She posted it.
100% she posted it. And secondly, that was so telegraphed the whole movie. I'm surprised.
It wasn't the whole movie. It was that one
so
line.
Telegraphed.
You said the whole movie. Name so one other time. Name one other time.
The whole passing of the baton thing. You saw it come down from the older generation. It was coming down the baton.
She literally didn't help her once through the movie other than that moment. You're wrong.
That's how I felt. That's how I felt coming out of this. But I guess then the action then continues and culminates with the president being killed,
yes.
Which is like, it's super interesting because the fact that he throws out his like Secretary of State or whatever she is, and she's like,
"That was
the president's willing to negotiate." Boom,
yeah,
and then straight in. Oh man,
we should bring him out here. We'll negotiate.
Yes,
fucking gnarly.
I guess then, like the real question. Well, I mean, Pablo then he's not called Pablo. I feel really bad. Keep saying Pablo. It's obviously Joel from The Last of Us gets his quote from the president, which was the whole point of it, which is something like,
"Please don't kill me.
Please don't let him kill me." But I guess the real question then is like, what happens next? And that's the big like tipping point of this movie. Like, is it better without him? Like, does the world right itself? Like, who then takes charge? So I find that really interesting to be left with stewing with, like, then what do you get? Do you get an army dictatorship, like army taking over as like the leaders, or do you get like a new strong, like what happens now? And that's not to be answered, but it's just a hypothetical.
Yeah, I don't even think it's the point, but of the movie, like it's like, their whole point is like, we don't take a side, we just document.
Yeah.
But
document your mentor being shot in the head because you're an idiot.
To the point of literally that.
Look, I really, really enjoyed this movie, Dale, and I enjoyed sitting through it with you. Like, I've not been that tense in a movie for a long time.
Fucking good movie.
Really tense, really just like, not overwhelming is the wrong word, but like stimulating.
Yeah, it's like, the pacing was really good too.
Yeah.
We didn't really talk about it much, but it was just like every time you might have like wanted a break, you kind of got one, but then there was still like anxiety around the break.
Yeah, and I think the interspersed elements through the road trip of the violence and it escalating sort of kept that pace ticking. Like you took a moment to sit, like what's his name from Golden Sun can't seem to do is you took a minute to sit with the characters and you learned a bit about them and they had a moment together. Then they got the violence and then it got heavier and heavier. Maybe not necessarily in terms of the amount of humans taking part in a violence, but the mental toll of it gets heavier every time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a bit more, and then you get a bit more, and escalates perfectly for me.
Yeah, I loved it.
DL, trivia true or false?
Do it to it.
Let's do it. So, true or false, DL. Yeah. This movie grossed $26 million domestically in its opening weekend off a $50 million budget. True or is that false?
I hope it's false. I hope it's
Sounds not good, but that is actually the best opening for an A24 weekend ever, surpassing Hereditary, which was only $14 million, and it's well on its way to make its budget back and more.
Okay.
So it got the number one opening box office for that weekend, which is...
It's pretty crazy though. Like, I would think like a lot of people would want to go see this movie. I guess it's like rated R, so just like the kids don't come.
I mean, and it's pretty divisive. I could imagine, like that town, some people would just stay out of it.
But it's not though. If you actually watch the movie, it's like not political at all. So it's like, shouldn't be divisive. Is my point.
It is making political statements without making political statements. For me,
it's saying that the world is divided right now. But that's not really a political statement. That's just a fact.
True.
Yeah.
True or false?
Yeah.
The film's American release date is the 12th of April, 2024, which actually correlates to the real American Civil War, which began exactly 163 years before that. Is that true or is that false?
I am a shit American. True. False. True.
It is true. Your face.
I have no idea. The Civil War is like, I don't even remember what years it was in.
163 years ago, exactly. Yeah. So I wouldn't...
Like, how long did it last? I have no idea.
Well, what would that be? 1940? Can't be 1940.
Could have been more than a year or two, right? Yeah. Anyway.
Be an American. Find out. Actually, you know what? Be a real American and don't care and just shout about it.
Exactly.
True or false, DL. Nick Offerman shot multiple endings for the film and was led to believe his character would in fact survive the events of the movie. True or is that false?
Feels false.
One I made up. You're getting better at my made up ones. I like that character, but like he wasn't in it enough. It felt like he only had like tiny amounts of time on set of the film. Like, it didn't feel like he was around a lot.
I mean, yeah, he would have probably only like had 4 scenes.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. I assumed he'd be more in it more, to be perfectly honest, because he was in all the trailers.
Well, and he's also just like a big name.
True. And very good in The Last of Us. Maybe that's how he got the role. True or false, DL? The neon colors, yellow, blue, and pink, are subtly featured multiple times throughout the film. Is that true or is that false?
Neon blue and pink?
False. Yellow, blue, and pink.
It definitely is, because I remember the chalk. Yeah.
Yeah, true. It is true. In many different scenes, including the sniper's fingernails, for one.
Yep.
The distinctive colors, like a slogan, can play an extremely important role in symbols in revolutions or insurgent movements, e.g. for the Ukraine 2004's Orange Revolution, blue and red with Viet Cong's movement for the Vietnam War, and the red carnation for Portugal in 1974. The frequency of these colors appearing on soldiers and on battlefields is likely a nod to this phenomenon. And I just think it's a really nice, interesting parallel to real war and things that soldiers do and things that just like trickle through in terms of like...
Totally.
But not really interesting. Well, thank you all for sticking with it. We do very much appreciate it. DL.
Yes, man.
Wrap up the show, my dude.
Of course, reach out. Send us stars. Send us memes.
send us a star.
Share the pod.
Send us a star. Yeah, pass the pod, guys. If you know someone who might like this.
Please do.
Our ramblings.
Please do. If you've been on this long, a big thank you. And a big thank you to Matthew Bliss for editing and mastering this week's episode. If you'd like to have Matt be a part of your team, help you out. We know you need it. All right. Get in touch.
You need him.
On business@mbpod.com or head to mbpod.com to find out more about his services. He's also got a podcast, From My Home to Yours, an expat rebat podcast, where Matt and his wife share their experiences and advice for others moving to Ireland from Australia or really anywhere in between.
We're moving anywhere. Between. Take his advice.
Betwanst.
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 Okay. Someone's bringing his best French out.
That I think is it, Tommy.
That's the end of the Civil War.
That's the end of the Civil War. I've got a hamburger sitting in a microwave.
Woof!
I gotta go eat it.
Exciting!
It gets too cold.
Tally ho, then.
Tally ho.
Later's Gators.
Later's Gators.